Hello and welcome to another episode of The Cocktail Conceit. This is a podcast where two bartenders, cocktail bartenders, talk about cocktail stuff. And then we also talk about a movie, usually starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And at the end of the episode, we have to make a cocktail together based on that movie, because that's the conceit. I am one of your bartenders. My name is Adam.
And I'm your other bartender. My name's Logan.
Logan, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Today is for you today. Well, actually, technically for me today, too. But it's about 4 a.m. here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is pretty late for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just got done doing a shift Friday. Thanks for being up late to record with me.
No problem. I was going to be awake anyway, because my sleep schedule is garbage. But it's okay.
It's about 10 p.m. for me here now. I am in New Zealand. This is our first record with me back in New Zealand.
Look at you, man, all the way back. I think when we started recording, you were in Columbus, yeah?
Yeah, when we started recording, I was in Columbus. I've been to too many places for having been a plague. It's very upsetting. But hopefully I will be in only this one place for a good long while now.
Here's hoping. Here's hoping. So what are you drinking there, Adam? What you got?
I'm drinking tea, and a very interesting tea at that. Mm-hmm. It is an anise tea. It's like a licorice anise fennel tea.
Huh. That's very interesting. I would hate that, but it sounds very interesting.
It's tastes really good. It tastes like I'm drinking the tea version of absinthe.
I'm guessing it's non-caffeinated.
Yeah, that's a herbal tea.
Makes sense. I don't like most herbal teas, generally.
It's super interesting. It's like a rich, savory one. And I've been super craving absinthe a lot, but absinthe is expensive. Yeah. And this is really scratching that itch.
Nice. Good for you. I don't really crave absinthe, although I did just put a new absinthe drink on the menu at our academy. So that's cool. I sent you earlier, but it's really good. It's really good.
I'm very interested to try that. It has a lot of ingredients put together that I would not think to put together.
Yeah.
So I was having a hard time getting a read on it.
It was it's a spin on a, it's like a riff on a New York sour. The original idea was I was trying to do something for St. Patty's Week at Fidel's like forever ago. And the idea, I had the initial idea of if I can get my sour to not just look yellow but to look green for a St. Patty's, and then if I were to top it with a Cabernet, which has like a, you know, it's like wine, it's like a reddish purple, then it'll have a really cool contrasting color. And I tried the initial version had just absinthe in it, and turns out not just absinthe, but I was trying to make it green by adding absinthe, because absinthe is green. It turns out the amount of absinthe you have to put in a drink to make it turn green is a lot.
it's a lot of absinthe.
So I ended up adding in a small amount of creme de menthe and absinthe. I did about a quarter ounce of each. And then I used Jameson. Now I'm using Laird's Bottled and Bond Apple Brandy, which I think is definitely an improvement.
For sure.
But it ends up with this really nice minty kind of anise citrusy kind of combo, and then the color of it's like gorgeous. It's like vibrant green to like your purple. It looks kind of gross once it's mixed together, but you know, that is what it is.
But the initial part is brilliant. I think a New York sour it's the prettiest cocktail. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't beat it. I don't care what garnish and what do and what glass you put it in. A New York sour is the prettiest cocktail, and and that's it.
That's very pretty. I think there's a few other cocktails that get a really nice color, but New York sour is good. It's so vibrant. And I've had plenty of people that I've made a New York sour for, or have seen me make a New York sour, and it is just eye catching immediately, because it's not a thing you usually see. It just is so distinct that it's, you know, even people who don't know what it is, or you know, have never heard of it before, immediately pay attention. Which is super cool.
It's the fajita effect.
Your sizzling dish. Yeah, exactly. Same kind of deal.
The dish comes out. Everyone wants it. They see smoke. time to get it.
Yeah.
So what are you drinking today, Logan?
Right now, I am drinking some oolong tea. I'm taking a bit of a dry week, although I did have a couple of drinks tonight because I have one of our mutual friends is in tonight, and I was out with him, although I drink far less than I usually do, so I think that's a win in my book.
Yeah. Kat was trying to do a bit of a dry week mm-hmm. this week because Monday we went to a hospitality like event mm-hmm. and everyone there got super messy. Yeah. I got pretty drunk, but I was the only I was one of the only people without a hangover the next day.
Nice.
And I attribute that to eating two huge bowls of pasta when I got home because I got Kat home, I got her into bed, and then she just drank some water and passed out while I was preparing food for us. Mm-hmm. And so she went to sleep, I ate my pasta, and then I was like, well, I have this second bowl of pasta here. And so I just ate that as well.
You know what's better than one bowl of pasta?
Two bowls of pasta.
Two bowls of pasta. Yeah, I had a similar experience. I had a coworker of mine's birthday. She was turning 31, and we all went out on a Monday when a bunch of us were off to drink. Not to drink. We went out to lunch, and then we went to go see a movie afterwards. And I had so much to drink that day. I had a whole, not large sake, but a small sake at the sushi place we went to by myself at lunch because no one wanted to split it with me, but I still wanted sake.
So you drank the whole bottle.
So I drank the whole thing by myself, which was fine. You know, I can drink.
You said a small sake. I'm guessing it was like a 375 milliliter.
Yeah. Well, it was hot sake, so it wasn't like a pre-bottled one. So I don't know how big their container size was, but it was probably like 375, maybe a little less than that.
Like 6 ounces something.
Yeah, something like that. And then one of our other friends snuck a bunch of shooters in for us for the movie, and she got me three fucking shooters of tequila. And, you know, she passed me one and passed me one. I'm like, okay, cool. I drink that one. Chased it with my slushie. Watched the movie. Passed me another. I'm like, oh yeah. I expected two. Yeah. I drank the other one. And I was like vibing. And then passed me a third one. I'm like, I was not expecting three shots of tequila during this movie. But now that I have it, I'm not going to say no. So did three shots of tequila then. And then we went out to bars after that. And I drank far too much. And I was fine and fine and fine. And then we were doing karaoke at the last bar and everyone was starting to leave. And it just hit me like a fucking truck. And that's the drunkest I've been in a minute. And, not like super embarrassing. I didn't do anything like horrible, but I woke up the next day. I'm like, yeah, that was a bit much. I need to, I should ease back a little bit. And I'd already been thinking that it'd been a while since I had taken more than like a day or two off of drinking, so I'm like, I should probably take some time. So I got a full weekend, and I've had like small little drinks of stuff here or there this week, and then tonight yesterday I had one cocktail at a bar at a restaurant that I went to just to try, and then tonight I had a shot and a beer. No, a shot and half a beer. So, you know.
Oh. Easy, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that rolls us into the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is kind of everything non-alcoholic, but that is still focused in the cocktail world.
Yeah. Kind of NA cocktails or low ABV cocktails.
Yeah. And also, I guess, bar lingo, what we mean when we talk about taking dry weeks and things like that.
Yeah.
Because I've explained this concept to a few people outside the industry, and it's very confusing to them.
Yeah. It I remember the first time I had like the actual concept of that brought up. It was when I was working at Liquor Locker back in the day. You and I worked at the same liquor store for a little bit.
Yeah. We worked at the same liquor store for a bit in college.
Yeah. And one of our coworkers, her name was Lav, told me that she was taking a week off, and she did on week, off week all the time. And I was like 24. I was like, what? What? All right, sure, I guess. Like, I didn't I didn't make a big deal about it, but I was just like definitely confused. Like, I could hear my brain making whirring noises where I was like, what? Not drink?
The machinery was heating up. Yeah. I think that's
drink less?
Makes it confusing. I think this is what makes it confusing for a lot of people, because most folks like go through high school and then like eventually somewhere in their late teens, early 20s, they start drinking. Mm-hmm. And then they like drink like a crazy person. And yeah, that's basically college for most folks.
Yeah.
Is like, and then they get out of college and there's so many people that like drink nonstop in college. And as soon as they graduate, they're just outside of that environment. Mm-hmm. And they just stop.
Yeah, they just don't
and
do it anymore.
They'll have a beer every 2 weeks on a Friday if they go out to dinner.
Yeah.
Or they'll have a 6-pack of Busch in their fridge that gets drank over the course of a month. Mm-hmm. And so I guess everyone in that mindset only has the paradigm of knowing, oh, I don't really drink, and or I only, when I drink, it's all of it. It's all the drinking.
Yes, it's that.
It's a very binary on-off
kind
of situation in a lot of people's minds.
I do think, especially in the States, I'm sure there's other countries that's like this, but there's definitely that culture of like binge drinking is a thing. I think that gets ingrained in people pretty early in high school or in early college.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of like, you know, it being like not a kind of like, you know, it's a what's the word I'm looking for? It's a thing you're not supposed to do. It's frowned upon.
That's taboo.
Taboo. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Yeah. It's taboo. So like, when you do start doing it, you do it with gusto, because
yes, you're getting you do it as much as you can.
You're getting away with something, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like when you discover the bowl of candy that is like hidden in your house somewhere. You're like, oh well, I'm just gonna eat all of this, because I don't know when I'm going to get access to this a second time,
right.
So I must take all of it with me in my tummy.
For sure. Which is, you know, not a super great mentality.
No.
But it's definitely a thing. Yeah, but I think the point you're getting to is that when you work in the service industry, especially bartending, you are just around alcohol constantly. And there is, it's not about always like getting drunk, but it is, you know, you're going to at least try cocktails, and you're going to at least sample stuff as you're going. Like if there's a new product in, or if you're messing with a new cocktail, or you got a new beer on draft, or you know, there's a rep coming in who wants you to sample X or Y Z thing, you know, you need to be able to do that, and you're just around it all the time. And regardless you know, you're actually getting drunk, you are drinking on the daily, usually at least a drink or two.
Yeah, you're having like about whenever I just had to go to a doctor's appointment for just a checkup, and they were like, do you smoke? No. Do you smoke marijuana? No. Do you do any drugs? No. How much do you drink? And I went, I'm a bartender, so I have
a lot.
And I'm a lot.
Yeah.
But see, when people think like, when they hear like, oh, I drink almost every day, what they have in their mind is that person who gets up, pours themselves a beer, puts beer in their cereal, and just starts the day up like that.
Right.
It's not like, no, I drink every day because I, you know, on my day off, you know, on a Monday, I'm going to go out for brunch and I'm going to run into my buddy that I saw over the weekend and I'm going to get a mimosa. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe that'll be the only thing I drink that day. And then like, you know, the Wednesday that I go into work, I am testing out a new cocktail. So I'm going to make a cocktail and I'm going to probably drink about half of it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe after shift, I'm going to go grab one more drink somewhere else. And then, oh, okay, here's a really good example. Last night, I did a one-off shift at a bar. And they were like, okay, you can get one staff drink for free. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I ended up getting that. And then the bartender also fucked up two cocktails. And they're like, hey, do you want one of these fucked up cocktails? So I was like, yeah, sure. And then another bartender was working on a cocktail towards the end of the night because it was slow. And he's like, oh, I'm working on this like Christmas cocktail for like the Christmas menu that's coming up in December. And so I then had like 4 or 5 sips of that cocktail, like critiquing the flavor. So that's suddenly what was supposed to be one drink turned into like 3, 2.5, and then I walked down the street to where my wife was working, and she was about to get off work, and so she's sitting around having a staffy, and so I come in and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll grab, you know, one more drink here to drink while she's like closing up and stuff. And then I had that, but then a group of folks walked in, and one of them was celebrating being an uncle, so he bought like all 4 people in the front of the bar a round of shots. So it kind of just snowballs when you're in that environment.
Yeah, you're just around it, so it's going to happen. And yeah, it's definitely, I think there's definitely a difference between like drinking to get drunk and drinking casually, I guess. It's more social than anything else. And you're just kind of, you're just around it. You're kind of enmeshed in that environment. And you kind of just do. But, you know, I've seen several, you know, there's a lot of bartenders, you know, after like a rough night on like a Friday, Saturday, like, yeah, they're going to go and they're going to have several drinks at whatever local dive. That's not always the case. You know, usually it's at least, you know, like, you know, you're going to go out with your coworkers and you're going to have a drink or two and, you know, a nightcap more than anything else. And it's not really about that like binge drinky mentality. It's just, you know, it's part of the social environment that you're in, I guess.
Yeah. And and also, I guess if you say to somebody, oh, yeah, I ended up having five drinks Friday night, they'd be like, oh, shit. Like, that's, so you had a wild night. Like, no, I had five drinks over the course of like 5 hours.
Right.
Yeah, whereas you're not somebody like who is
downing them. Yeah.
Yeah, like somebody who is going out, they're going to have, and they have five drinks, they'd be having that all in like 1 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of alcohol in a short amount of time, it really magnifies its effects.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's, because your body digests alcohol at like a pretty constant rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a diesel engine. It'll just keep going, but it won't go any faster.
Yeah, it's about a drink an hour is the rate that your body does typically. And I mean, that can vary per person. Like, it's obviously not everyone's the same. Some people metabolize a bit faster, some people a bit slower. And you know, the more you drink, the better your body, well, I don't know what the better your body is, the more your body is used to doing it.
So it'll have more of a stockpile of the enzymes in your liver, which break down alcohol just because it's, it's used to being like, oh, we need these.
Yeah, we need these. Yeah. We should just save these just in case.
Yeah. I don't have any of the gut flora that break down steak because I haven't had steak in 10 years. But whiskey, I can eat a lot of whiskey.
Can eat a lot of whiskey. Yeah, because that's the thing. When I say that I drink very heavily on that Monday, I drink from 4 until midnight, so about 8 hours, and I had about 14 or 15 drinks, which is quite a bit for me. Yes. I can handle my drinks. But that's over a very long period of time, and that's me going pretty hard. And there's other people I know. I'm not a big person. I'm a small person. I know for a fact that some people I know that don't work in the service industry or don't, you know, consistently drink, I can drink under the table for sure.
That was one of the funnest times I ever had. Just like a year or two before I left for New Zealand the first time, I was hanging out with two of our buddies, Danny and Derek, and those guys are both like bigger than me.
Yeah.
They're both like, I think Danny has at least like 20, 30 pounds of me, or he did at the time, and Derek had like 50 pounds on me.
Oh yeah, easy.
Because I'm also kind of a smaller dude.
Yeah.
But I had been bartending for a while and still in that like drinking mentality, and they had both like gotten houses and stuff. And I remember we went out to a bar one time and they had like two beers, we all had a shot, and they were both like, oof. And I'm there like two beers and a shot in, and I'm like,
what are you doing?
I am the scrawniest of us all. What are you doing?
I don't feel
you were pulling down rookie numbers.
Yeah. It was in the spring. We hosted a surprise birthday party for one of our friends who's in one of our D&D groups. And she came in, before the party, I was helping setting up because one of our other friends was like the body watcher. Like, he was out with them to get them to the surprise party. I was hanging out at our house, you know, making sure all the decorations are ready, just hanging out in there to greet guests when people came in. And one of my friends who I hadn't seen in a while, she's a decent, like, you know, she can drink. Like, I hung out with her at bars, like, you know, does a good job. Like, definitely not like an amateur, not like a lightweight. But she comes in and I'm like, well, I'm going to do a shot before people start showing up because there's going to be people here I won't know. And like, you know, I want to be a little loose.
I just want to loosen up. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to need at least like, I want a little bit of a shot, a little bit of liquid courage to, you know, help me mellow. So I did one shot and she did a shot with me. She's like, I'll do a shot with you. Sure. And then, there was a little bit of drama with her guy friend that was there. And he left. And then she was like, well, I'm getting drunk. And I'm like, I'll drink with you, sure. And she tried keeping up with me, and it didn't go over well for her. Like, I was fine. Like, we were taking shots at the same pace. We were drinking at the same pace. And she was shmammered by the time everyone showed up. And I was just, like, mellow.
You were just, like, beginning to feel, like, yeah. a small amount of buzz.
Like, oh, yes. Yeah. I got a good buzz. This is a fun time. And then, like, I started seeing, like, she got really drunk. The birthday girl came in. She had one drink at dinner and then did one shot with me and that other friend, in birthday celebration. And then I made her one cocktail. Yeah. And, well, she's a school teacher. She does not drink very heavily at all. And okay, she's also a small person. And she had those three drinks, and she was, like, just gone. Like, And I'm like, oh, I probably need to be one of the sober heads, one of the clear heads at this point. So I just, like, stopped drinking. And I did. I was sober in, like, an hour. And I'm like, okay, cool. But the point is, like, yeah. I forget sometimes when I'm not hanging out with my bartending friends, like my service
initiative. Yeah, like,
friends.
We're all of our friends are, like, in hospo. And so you get used to, like, oh, yeah, it's normal to do three shots and not feel it. It's like, no.
Nope, sure ain't. So you got some experience there. Well, so.
But that leads us into talking about why a lot of people who are in hospo for a long time, like, long term, not just like in college, you know, taking tables for fun.
Yeah.
And people who don't burn themselves out by the time they're 30.
Right.
Are the kind of people who can do that and enjoy that, but moderate that.
Yeah.
And that comes in a lot of different ways. Like, sometimes your drinking ramps up. You ended up, you know, at this bar on a Friday and oops, you had five drinks. And then that kind of just keeps accidentally happening for, like, the next few days or the course of several weeks until you realize, like, oof, man, I've been waking up a little dusty every morning, and I just feel I'm carrying a little extra water weight right now. I'm probably drinking a little bit too much. And then you do a dry week, a dry weekend, a dry month just to, dry out.
Yeah, just kind of reset a little bit. It's, you know, and it's also... I found it very satisfying doing it this week, like this past couple of weeks, because you get to a point where, you know, like, it, working in service, you definitely deal with people who do absolutely have, like, a drinking problem. Like, they're going way too hard, way too often, and it's probably not healthy. And when you look at that in comparison to, like, oh, hey, I also drink very often and very consistently, I do sometimes wonder, it's like, oh, do I have a problem? Is there an issue here? And then being able to just sit and be like, oh, no, I don't, because I can stop drinking for 2 weeks straight. And I did. And I didn't, like, outside of, like, the first day that I did, didn't really want to drink any of the days. There's, like, maybe one night I was at work, and it wasn't even that I wanted the alcohol. It was more that I habitually will have, like, a post shift drink, you know, like I'll drink a beer or something while I'm closing, or make myself a cocktail while I'm closing at the bar to finish out, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of just like, it's a habit, not a addiction.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I gotta be honest with you too. When I'm going through a dry week or doing that, I don't really miss it. I don't crave it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like I don't feel like I'm missing something. Usually.
Right. The one thing I do miss out on is, like, doing, like, the social aspects of it, like, you know, going out to a bar with your coworkers and having a shot. Because for me, it's like, the shots aren't usually there for me to, well, sometimes when I'm really wanting to get, like, specifically I'm going out to get drunk, then the shot is to get drunk. But usually, if I'm out with my bartending friends, or I'm out with
friends. It's a team building exercise.
Yeah, it's like, hey, let's all do a shot, because, you know, that's a fun thing to do. We all get together, we do a thing. And then, you know, maybe that's the last drink we have of the night. You know, we're cheersing, and then we're done for the night.
Or during service, like, you know, you guys just got over a big rush, and you're like, oh, let's all do a round of safety shots.
Yep.
Or the mood is real low on a Friday night, but you know the rush is coming. You're like, oh, you know, we can only use a pick-me-up real quick. Yep. Let's do a quick round of safety shots.
Exactly.
But I will say, the bar that I worked at in Taipei was really good about that, to where if somebody wasn't drinking that night because they were driving home or something, they'd be like, all right, no, you don't have to have shots. But they would be totally down to, like,
pour them pineapple juice or water. Or when I had my protein shake, I would just, like, pour myself a shot of, like, the protein shake that I'm already drinking. But
gross.
I get
but okay,
something
yeah.
to yeah, drink with them. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the concept of dry weeks, I think it's an important thing to talk about. Oh, hey, we should probably bring up the thing that we're also talking about.
Yeah,
because
we will also be talking about something slightly different. Since this topic is slightly different, we're specifically not talking about alcohol. Today, we're specifically not talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because it's October, baby. And that means we're talking Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, it's our Hocus Pocus spooktacular for Halloween.
I love this movie. I watch it every year, and I watched it every year growing up as a kid with my mom and my sisters.
Yeah, this is also the first thing we've done twice now. Well, if you don't count Hamilton.
Yeah, but those were different. This is just a direct repeat.
Direct repeat, yeah. Yes, that's true.
This episode is not on the rocks. It's on the Hocus Pocus.
It's on the Hocus Pocus. On the Pocus Hocus.
We already discussed, we will be making a non-alcoholic cocktail for this episode. So let's talk a little bit about what that really means when someone says a non-alcoholic cocktail.
Yeah, like an NA beverage, or I've heard them, mocktail is a common like slang term for it. Yeah,
mocktail.
I've seen a lot of bars use that on their menu. And it's kind of, I feel like that's not as well known because I've seen a lot of restaurants and bars, and in the service industry, I think that's a pretty commonly heard thing. But I've said that to a few guests before, like, that said, like, oh, hey, do you have any non-alcoholic things? I'm like, oh, you know, I've got X or Y in a beer or non-alcoholic, like, canned or bottled beverage. But, you know, I can also make you a mocktail. And they've, like, looked at me weird, like, a what now? And I'm like,
a what?
Yeah, a non-alcoholic cocktail, you know. Yeah,
like mocktail. I've always heard that. I've also heard people be like, no, don't call them mocktails. They're non-alcoholic cocktails.
That's fucking stupid.
It's more like refined. I'm like, eh, it's fine. It can be a mocktail.
You have a goofy name. that I told you at my slight tangent. So I really don't like the term mixologist.
I hate it. I don't know anyone who does.
It's really bad and it's really douchey. Anyone that calls himself a mixologist, I immediately think less of you because it just sounds really pretentious and I really don't like it.
Yes.
So I usually prefer the term like craft bartender or cocktail bartender or just bartender. That's all fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine with all of that. One of my other coworkers came up said the phrase coctologist. And I think that's my new favorite one because it has that same I'm an ologist, so I'm cool. It's scientific, but it also it's taking the piss out of it because you have the word cock in it, so it's great.
Yes.
I love it.
I have heard that one, and I really do enjoy
coctologist. I've said that to a guest a few times too, and I always get a laugh out of it. So I think I'm gonna keep using that one. It's like anytime someone asks me mixologist, I'm like, no, I prefer the term coctologist actually. Next time someone asks me that, I'm going to say that just deadpan and see if they laugh.
Straight,
Yeah, but speaking of NA beverages, I'm going to start my next beverage, which I've been drinking a crap ton of this week, which is a LaCroix. But I've been throwing a few dashes of bitters in it, which is very similar to one of my favorite and one of the easiest NA cocktails that I know of, which is just soda water and bitters, maybe with some citrus.
What is super popular here in New Zealand and Australia is a drink called a lemon lime bitters.
Ooh.
And it's you take carbonated lemonade, which is way more popular around here.
Yeah, is it?
It's like you're gonna have Coca-Cola and you're gonna have carbonated lemonade.
Huh.
Yeah, they don't really have like it would be like Sprite in the U.S.
Right.
But it's specifically carbonated lemonade, and then you're gonna squeeze about a half a lime into it, and then you're going to top it with just a shit ton of bitters.
Yeah, just a bunch of bitters.
Over the top. And it's super good.
Oh, yeah. Well, so that's the thing, is like just soda water and bitters, especially if you, I mean, I like just Angostura, but like if you pick another kind of bitters, it's super great. And to the people that know enough about bitters, bitters does technically have alcohol in it. That is true. But a couple of dashes in a whole soda or whole seltzer water, that's like less than a percent of alcohol, like 0.01% of alcohol.
Yeah.
Like it's next to nothing.
Negligible.
Yeah, it's almost nothing. You got to think, you know, even a low alcohol, like a low alcohol content beer is like 4%.
A low alcohol content beer here in New Zealand is like 2.5.
Wow, really? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's a...
yeah, I always treat like the European, like especially British European styled beers tend to be lower, even lower than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only place you can really consistently get a beer that's like 3% or lower in the US is in Utah.
Because that's right. They have limitations.
They have
on
weird
it.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And speaking of second beverage, I'm also going to get my second non-alcoholic beverage, which I'm very excited to show you.
What is it? I want to see. Adam left. I'm going to sit here and drink my LaCroix. It's Pamplemousse, for anyone that's curious. Pamplemousse with some Angostura bitters. Very tasty. Been drinking like a fish. What you got?
This is Hongcho Korean blueberry drinking vinegar.
Oh, drinking vinegar. That's interesting.
Oh, it's so fucking good.
Yeah.
The only place I've ever been able to buy it in a store, you can get it on Amazon. It's actually pretty easy. Just Google Hongcho, and they have like a whole range of flavored drinking vinegars. But the only place I've ever found it in a store is in like Asian grocery stores.
Yeah, I think I want to say I've had a drinking vinegar before. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
No. Nope.
But they're super tasty, and yeah, it's a thing in Korea. Like, that's a good way to like start your morning, is like a shot of drinking vinegar and a glass of water as like a health tonic.
Interesting.
But it makes a great non-alcoholic cocktail. Poured about an ounce in this glass, and I'm just going to top the rest with soda, which I'm going to crack right now.
Nice.
Yeah, it's so pleasant. I made a really popular drink with this exact drinking vinegar last time I was here.
Nice. Yeah, I need to mess around with some more vinegars in general.
I think vinegars are super interesting and one of my favorite ingredients to use when making non-alcoholic drinks, because it's a interesting flavor that people don't usually run into in their like liquids.
Yeah,
very much.
And it's also gonna like pack with it like that level of acidity that you would expect out of some cocktails too, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What ingredients do you usually turn to like right off the bat if you're going to go make a non-alcoholic cocktail?
Honestly, for most of mine, I try to just go for I usually go for sour builds generally. I've done a few times I'll just do like a margarita build with like agave and some orange juice and then my like lime or sour mix. And the orange juice kind of there to help get your orange flavors, because you're not going to have your triple sec in there, obviously. And then I'll usually like salt rim it and, you know, shake top with a little bit of soda water usually, and then give it a little bit of a stir. Cause I think you need even a, like assuming like, you know, you're accounting for the alcohol not being there. You're not going to get the right texture of the cocktail if you just fill in the gaps with just syrup and citrus juice. It's just not going to fill properly. So I've always topped with like a little bit of soda water to kind of get it kind of close to that. If not that, I also offer a lot of the time to do mules for people, to like non-alcoholic mules, because ginger beer, you can get like you can get alcoholic and non-alcoholic ginger beer. Most bars will carry the non-alcoholic for mules specifically. And I mean, a non-alcoholic mule is basically the same fucking thing as a normal mule. So, you know, you just, I do like, you know,
yeah, pretty much.
I'll quarter some limes and I'll muddle those in my glass and then, you know, crush some ice, top it with ginger beer. If I'm feeling fancy, I'll throw some bitters on top of that, you know, give it a little bit of something. But, you know, just a good mule or a good margarita is pretty easy to make, not in a, and that's my usual go-to. I've done some other ones. I've made in a Cosmos before. Those are actually pretty good. Yeah, but I mean, it's mostly cranberry juice, and you do a little bit of sweetener, and then usually I'll throw a little bit of orange juice or something in there too, and then top with a little bit of soda water again. You can get that, not like spot on, but pretty close. But
One of my first like secret go-tos when making mocktails was, instead of using soda water, to use tonic water.
Oh, yeah.
Because people never taste tonic water outside of a gin and tonic usually.
Okay.
And so it brings that... It's like tasting something sour, but it doesn't have the taste of lemon or lime. Mm-hmm. Your brain thinks it tastes like those two fruits, even though it's just citric acid.
Right.
And so if you put tonic water into like one of those cocktails, they'll taste that like quinine kind of like thing, and they'll associate it with like a gin and tonic and like an alcoholic drink.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That actually makes a lot of sense. I'll have to try that at some point, because we do carry hot tonic too. That could be a really good topper for a lot of mocktails in general. Because I do think that quinine, bitterness will kind of help fill that gap a little bit in flavor too.
Yeah, it's an extra flavor, and that flavor specifically is just going to trigger those memories.
Yeah, because I do feel like that's one of the bigger pitfalls in making mocktails is you can start from a cocktail recipe and take out the alcohol, but you've got to find a way to fill that. You can't just take it out and expect it to be the same. It's not, you know.
Yeah, no.
You're not going to get close.
It's not going to work that way.
I mean, it's kind of like I've noticed it with a lot of not a lot of vegetarian food, but like if you try to take a non-vegetarian recipe or non-vegan recipe and turn it into a vegan or vegetarian recipe, it's kind of difficult because a lot of cooking assumes the kind of flavor profile you're getting from your meat or your fats or your oils from that. So you kind of have to, you're kind of going to fill in those gaps some other way. So, I mean, I think that's getting a lot better. I've been to some vegan restaurants that get it really spot on, they'll have to make up a whole new dish, basically start from scratch with the intention that it all needs to be vegan or vegetarian. And
see, I think that's the best way I think to do it.
Yeah.
Like Indian food.
Yeah. Indian food.
A ton of it's just straight vegetarian, and it's delicious.
Yeah. And I think it's great. That's one of the reasons why like vegetarian Indian food is so much better than like, if you were to take any other, like several other cultures and try to make them vegetarian, like trying to make
German vegetarian food, not great.
Fuck off. Yeah. German vegetarian food would be garbage because everything has meat in it or dairy or butter, you know, of some kind. So, you know, you can't really do it. Yeah. But I mean, I feel like, you know, like a lot of Italian is just like incidentally vegetarian, which is really interesting. Not vegan, obviously, because they use a lot of cheese, but, you know,
cheese and butter.
Yeah. A lot of cheese and butter. But yeah, I think that's a pretty common pitfall for a lot of cocktails, is just trying to just copy paste without the alcohol, and you can't really
it's like that. If you tried to make a non-alcoholic daiquiri and you're just like no rum, way more lime juice, way more sugar, it's like
it's gonna come off, it's gonna be a little off at the end.
You basically just made limeade, right? Which is fine, but
yeah. I found before, like, if you have access to a lot of fresh fruit that's not like citrus, doing like muddled like strawberries or blueberries, or like, and you can use like specialty syrups too if you'd like, or bottled syrups, but I find that if you have those fresh muddled anythings, that's a really good way too. I remember doing, that's what I would do for some mules. We had a blackberry bourbon mule at Fidel's when I worked there, and every once in a while I would have someone ask me for a mocktail. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just make you a blackberry mule, and I'd muddle up some fresh blackberries in there and, you know, top it with some ginger beer and do everything else the same, and honestly that turns out pretty well.
It sounds great, because especially like a mule, like you're just getting like usually like a shot of vodka in there,
yeah,
so it's really not adding to the flavor profile.
No.
So those mocktail super well,
right? And then like, you know, ginger beer is, it's already such an aggressive flavor that like it's going to cover up most of what else, you know, most of the alcohol taste you would have gotten anyway. So, and if you're like any craft bar worth a damn should have a pretty good quality ginger beer. So like, you know, you're getting a good drink just by itself there too. So,
one of my favorite, like secret go-tos now, in just like the past year after living in Taiwan, is to base mocktails around tea.
Mm.
Like you take like an Earl Grey tea and you steep the hell out of it. You get it really strong. You get it a really strong flavored tea. Mm-hmm. Like you over steep it and you pull way more flavor out than like you should, or at least try to.
Right.
And so then you can use it. Kat was in a tea cocktail competition, and she made like a really awesome like tea cocktail. Mm-hmm. But during that process, I just started playing around with that as well, and I made a Earl Grey Old Fashioned, and it's super good. You just double steep Earl Grey, mm-hmm. and then you build an Old Fashioned. Just switch it out 1-to-1 entirely.
Oh, interesting. So is it no alcohol whatsoever? Without?
We'll use the bitters.
Oh, the bitter. Yeah, right.
So yeah,
right. But you're swapping your liquor component just for the tea that you made.
Yeah, you just swap the whiskey 1-to-1 with
interesting.
Over steeped Earl Grey.
Yeah,
and it comes out real tasty.
Yeah, I kind of see
if
that.
If you like Earl Grey,
I do actually like. Well, I've come around on Earl Grey. I don't like drinking Earl Grey by itself, but I actually really like it as a flavor component because I've done this a few times. I've done a lime cordial infused with tea, and I think that turns out really fucking nicely. And I've made some mocktails mm-hmm. with that before, and it's actually pretty good. You don't really have to do a lot to it. You literally just need to like shake it. I usually like once again top it with like a little bit of soda to kind of elongate it a little bit more, give it a little bit of effervescence. And yeah. that cordial that I've made, it's the Jeffrey Morgenthaler recipe of cordial. Turns out
very good cordial,
really good. But the good thing is it's got the sugar and it's also got your tartness in it, all kind of combined. And it takes to tea infusion really well. What I've been doing lately when I do that, I just do tea, like loose tea mixed in with the rest of my ingredients when I blend it, and then I just strain it all out, and yeah, works fucking perfectly.
Just that sounds great.
Yeah, infuses really, really well.
That's also why I was drinking that interesting tea I had earlier, mm-hmm. because it has that anise absinthe kind of flavor, mm-hmm. and so it doesn't taste, you know, fruity or like a black tea mm-hmm. or like a green tea of any sort. It has that licorice kind of taste that you would find in something with, you know, absinthe or pastis in it.
Yeah.
And I think it would work super well in more what you would think of as booze forward drinks, mm-hmm. like old fashions, Negronis, stirred things. Mm-hmm. Using that to swap in and make versions of those that are non-alcoholic with that tea. I'm really interested to play around with that.
I don't know if you've got a chance to do this yet. I have a little bit, but I haven't done a whole lot with it. They're starting to come out with some non-alcoholic, like faux liquor, basically. Like there's some gins, yeah. and there's one brand, I forget what the name of it is off the top of my head, but they make a
Seed Lip.
Yeah, Seed Lip is one of them. I don't know if that's the one I'm thinking of.
That was the first big one.
But the one I'm thinking of, it has a gin, a faux triple sec or dry curacao, and then a faux Campari equivalent.
Yes, I have had the non-alcoholic Campari alike.
Yeah, it's really not bad. I don't dislike any of it. My biggest criticism of that is that I think, from what I've seen, they're a little too expensive for what I think they probably should be, because their price point tends to be the same as whatever they're trying to copy. So it's like you're paying full price for a gin that has no alcohol in it. And I'm not saying that's, obviously the point is to be non-alcoholic. I get that.
Yes.
But also, I feel like there's a little bit of like a... they're trying to pull a wool over, you know what I mean? Like it's you're getting less of something. I don't know if it should be the same price. Your price point should be lower than alcohol, generally.
I think like since those products alcohol, are... At least. Yeah, I think since those products are so new, like that's a very new thing to start marketing, it's just... Like
you got to make some money.
The first Teslas,
yeah,
the first Teslas were like the high end ones because it's a niche product, so it's going to be priced at that niche level.
It is very niche, and they're definitely marketing more towards like craft bar. From what I've seen, like I've seen several craft bars that have that kind of stuff in it, and I've not disliked any of the stuff I've had. I do find with the cocktails that I've had with those in them, it's that same kind of problem where I don't know that you can 1-to-1 replace whatever you're trying to replace with those, and it works.
No, you definitely have to
you gotta
readjust your measures.
Yeah, you got to take your specs and shift them a little bit because it's not gonna do it.
Yeah, because like ethanol on its own has a drying quality mm-hmm. to drinks and liquor in general. So if you have a drink that has a higher ABV in the final cocktail build, it's going to be a little bit drier, so you have more room to put in more sugar to balance it out. Or or you can use, say you make a cocktail with gin and you're using Beefeater and it's 40%, and you're like, it's not quite there, switch it out for a navy strength gin. Mm-hmm. You know, keep everything the same, but suddenly the alcohol content in your gin is 57% instead of 40, and that's going to have a drying effect. Mm-hmm. That could balance it out.
Yeah, it's really going to change the texture and the mouthfeel of that for sure. And I think that's...
I will say that...
Okay.
Oh, I was going to say, I will say the non-alcoholic spirits that I've had so far. Mm-hmm. I've had Seedlip. There's another one from Australia called Liars. Mm-hmm. That has a whiskey and a rum.
That's a really clever name. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, it's Liars with like a Y.
Yeah, but that's good. I like that. Big fan.
Yeah. Those are pretty good. And I just went to a tasting like 2 days ago with a New Zealand wine and gin brand here. Mm-hmm. Where they make a really stock standard New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and then they also take like half of that they get and they put it through a centrifuge to pull the alcohol out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just sell it as a 0% wine, but it still has the same flavor profile as their normal Sauvignon Blanc.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then they take all the booze that they stripped out of it, and they turn that into gin.
Oh, yeah. I can see that being really
interesting. And that has and that has an extremely interesting flavor.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because they don't have any other botanicals except juniper, and they put in a very small amount of juniper in it. Mm-hmm. Because in order to be a gin, your main botanical, the botanical that you have the most of, has to be juniper. Mm. So they decided, tiny bit of juniper, no other botanicals, so it's automatically the largest amount in our botanical blend.
Yeah.
And it's mostly that pulled off wine distillate that you're tasting. Mm-hmm.
Is that a legal qualification for gin? Because I feel like I've had gins before that didn't have any juniper or had
in America, you can especially like craft distilleries are really pushing how much they're a gin.
Yeah.
But there always is at least some juniper.
Okay, cool. There's been a lot of, there's two I can think of. There's Opir and Roku gins. Mm-hmm. Both use a lot of Asian botanicals. And
yeah, Roku is Japanese and Opir is Indian.
It is Indian, yeah. But both of those, they're not very juniper heavy. Opir definitely has some, but it's not very heavy. And then Roku, I don't get any juniper in that at all. It's very just like citrus forward for sure.
Yeah, gin, unlike something like bourbon or tequila, mm-hmm. is not internationally recognized as a very strict rule, heritage only can be made in one place sort of thing.
Yeah, just needs to be infused with some kind of botanical element.
Yeah
I think I'm kind of okay juniper, with that.
Yeah,
in general. Yeah, I was talking to there was some guests at work tonight that were talking about they had bought a bunch of vodka so that they could do a vodka blind taste test at their house with some friends to see what would rank the highest and everything. And they were talking to me about it, and that was really interesting. And they were asking my opinion on what I thought would rank higher. And I was like, I guarantee you one of your lower to mid shelf vodkas is going to rank the highest. I'm not going to say which one it's going to be, but of whatever grouping you have, I guarantee you one of your like low mid tier ones is going to be the top rated by almost everyone. And I also guarantee that most of you aren't going to be able to tell which ones are which, except for, I made sure to point out, they said they had Grey Goose. And I'm like, I'll be interested to see if you can pick out which one's Grey Goose just by the mouthfeel. Because they literally put glycerin in it to make it feel different on the tongue. Think of it like that. Like,
oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's one of the
reasons. That's a good bit of trivia.
Yeah, Grey Goose, I don't know how much they put in, but they put it in amount, and it gives it like a little bit of like an oily kind of mouthfeel.
Yeah, it clings to your mouth.
Yeah.
I know that.
There's a lot of reasons why they might do that. I think it's probably because they're trying to imitate potato vodkas. A potato vodka that's not heavily distilled will have a bit of an oily mouthfeel to it as well.
Okay.
So it's probably a little bit of that and a little bit to, like, trick people who are drinking it into thinking it's special because they add that.
Yeah. It's of higher quality because there's this weird property associated with it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like,
99% of Grey Goose is marketing.
Yeah. I feel like that's most of vodka, honestly. But anyway, so we're talking about that. And then I was talking to, our buddy Eric, who was at the bar top while I was chatting with these guests. And I was like, you know, it'd be really interesting if someone like retooled or tried to push the culture in vodka to make it less about not tasting anything and more about showcasing your mash bill. Because vodka you could make from anything.
Yeah.
And there's this tradition that we have right now of everyone wants to be the most distilled because that makes it taste the least like whatever it's made from. And I think that's so fucking boring. And what you could do with vodka instead, whereas, you know, almost every other kind of liquor, your mash bill can get lost in whatever else you're doing, whether it's aging or infusion or, you know, whatever. The only one I can think of is like, you know, like tequila. Like tequila showcases the agave. That's part of the whole point of tequila is that you make it from agave. So you taste the agave in the tequila. You would never distill tequila like 12 times to get all of the agave flavor out because then it wouldn't taste like tequila. So like the same thing is like you could do that with vodka. You could totally, you know, if you really pushed, if you wanted to really showcase like, oh, hey, this is, we're doing a traditional bourbon mash bill. This is what that tastes like pre-aging. Or if you want to do a high rye mash bill, make a vodka out of that. And there you go. You can get taste what a rye would taste like pre-aging, which, I mean, is all White Dog, but, like, I think...
Yeah, I will say
pushing
that
idea could be interesting.
And making it good. I will say I have had a lot of unaged whiskeys, like White Dogs, because I've been at around a lot of, like, craft distilleries in the U.S.
Right.
And fucking every fucking craft distillery fucking releases their unaged whiskey mash bill.
Yep.
And not a one of them are good.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Whiskey, you need to put whiskey in a barrel. There's a reason why they did.
I'm not saying it would be good for sure. I'm just saying it would be more interesting than if they kept doing this whole like six times distilled bullshit because I hate that. It drives me crazy. I would much rather distill it once, do it right, and then do something interesting in either your mash bill or in your the environment that it's made in, like Jamaican rums where they're copper pot still and you get that funk in it. Yeah. And they get real interesting flavor to it. And you know, I guess, you know, I'm asking vodka to be a thing. It's not, but
yeah. And cause like what you're describing is, okay, you want to taste the mash bill. All right. Then get a rum agricole.
Right.
It's all sugarcane juice and it's not aged. And there you go.
You're right.
You know, you want taste the mash bill, get Pisco. It's made out of all grapes. Get cachaça. It's also made out of all grapes. Get unaged brandy. It's also made out of all grapes. Get unaged grappa. It's also made out of all grapes.
Yeah, so it's a better version of Ciroc. It's a better version of Ciroc. Yeah. There you go. Ciroc is garbage. I hate that. That is...
which is a vodka made out of all grapes. And it's like, that's... We like.
But they took all the grape flavor
all
out.
All the things.
They took all the grape flavor out.
It's not. Doesn't taste good anymore. But vodka, I guess it's places where you can take, you know, oh, what do we have this time? We have some rice and a few potatoes and like 10% barley and this corn. Fucking distill it and then distill it until we can't taste all that bad stuff in there.
Yeah, basically. And then you're good. You're taking all the. They're just trying to get all the bad flavors out because they started with something that was bad. So you know, I mean, I guess that. That's one way to do it. So I think we've talked out making mocktails. Are there any other NA beverages that you really enjoy? Because I really don't care for most NA beer. Like obviously, I have not consistently drank a lot. I just feel like NA beers always just miss the mark. Like I get what they're going for, and I think if I was in a point in my like if I wanted to stop drinking forever, yes. That's closer to a real, like a beer flavor without actually being beer. Sure. Like, if I didn't drink beer for like 3 years and that was the first thing I had, I'd be like, yeah, that tastes like a beer. But every NA beer I've had just tastes real flat. Like, it just is missing. It's like diet soda. It tastes like it's the diet soda of beer, where it just, it feels, I can tell that it's missing something.
I don't think that NA beer has a strong place in the market. I don't think NA beer is suddenly going to explode and grow much.
No,
like, it's
not.
Its place in the market has that hard cap on it. Because if you, NA beer is like the nicotine patch of like non-alcoholic drinks. It's for somebody who drank beer their whole life and their doctor said, can't drink beer anymore. And they're like, well, I'm not going to stop drinking beer. So I'm going to have this NA Heineken from now on. It's like, you know what is so much better than a bread flavored soda? Any other flavored soda.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
get a LaCroix.
Right, exactly.
Get lemon lime bitters. Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to go from that. Right. Something I've drank a lot of recently, and not even when I was not drinking, just for fun because I like them. Lagunitas, which I think is actually owned by, I want to say it's owned by InBev now. It might be. It's owned by one of the big, one of the big beer companies, liquor companies. I can't remember for sure. But anyway, Lagunitas makes a, it's called their Hoppy Refresher. And it's not an NA beer.
Okay.
It is a seltzer that they flavor with hops. And its only ingredients are water and hops and potassium. And that's it.
Okay, see, that seems
it's like a
better idea.
It's a hoppy seltzer, and I'm going to tell you, it's really good. It's like legitimately delicious. It tastes like a grapefruit seltzer, and it's like perfect, and I could drink those all fucking night. Is the other thing, I think one of the things, one of the benefits I could see from NA beers is like a it's like a non-beer option when you're not drinking. It's kind of nice to have something that has a facade of being alcohol.
It comes in a brown can, comes in a brown bottle.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's still in glass. Yeah.
You're with your buddies and you're all drinking.
Has the same kind of label.
Yeah. You're all drinking from bottles and you know, you don't want to feel left out. Whereas, you know, if you're, everyone else is drinking beer and you're sitting there with like a can of soda, you know, it feels, it feels different.
You know what also is fucking cool? If everyone's sitting around with like glass bottles of Busch Light, a glass bottle of like Mexican Coke.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
That real classic Coca-Cola glass bottle, that still looks so good and cool.
Yeah.
And it tastes good.
Yeah. Mexican Coke is pretty good. But yeah, I think those NA beers just, man, they just really missed the mark. I've yet to have one that I've been pretty satisfied with. But that Hoppy Refresher will, like, I'm not getting paid by Lagunitas for anything. I will shill the hell out of it. Like, I'm trying to convince every bar in town to pick that shit up because I will happily drink that anytime. I'm never going to be mad about it. Like, you know, because there's sometimes where, like, you know, when I have, like, not been drinking for a night, it's like, I just want the night off. And I decided to drink, like, a soda and bitters. And every once in a while, I'm like, I kind of wish this was, like, an actual cocktail. I wish I would, not necessarily because I want the alcohol, just because actual cocktails are more fun. Generally,
you want the complexity and the flavor of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I could sit and drink those Hoppy Refreshers all fucking day and never once be like, feel like I'm missing out. You know what I mean? Like it feels pretty good.
Man, okay, I gotta try that then.
Yeah,
I usually don't go for carbonated stuff, but it sounds
well. See, that's
very
the thing is that I actually really like carbonated stuff. I don't really drink soda much anymore. Like Cokes, or like sugary sodas generally. But I really like carbonated stuff. And that's why I like LaCroix, and that's why I like those Hoppy Refreshers and other stuff like that, because it gives me that little bit of carbonation that's just, it makes it more of a fun drink. You know, it's fizzy. It gives me that mouthfeel that I like.
I will say when I do a dry week or something, I end up drinking a shit ton more tea. Because when I want something to drink for the flavor and like the enjoyment, I usually make myself a cocktail. I pour myself a little scotch. But if I'm doing a dry week, I go and grab some tea because tea is also, it's like a cocktail in a glass, because if you get the good stuff, it has complexity, depth. There's a mixture of things.
I think my issue...
You know, you get to taste the terroir in like wherever the tea was grown, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think the last time I took a week or so off drinking, I was drinking a lot of tea. I think it was at your recommendation. And that actually helped me a lot. I was drinking a lot more tea that week than I usually do. I think my only issue is hot beverages just aren't my thing usually. You know, I like it when really? Okay. like on a really cold day, or like, you know, like a fall or like early spring day, I do like a nice hot beverage, but generally that's not what I usually want. I want my beverages to be like room temp or cold. Just in general, like that's where my enjoyment comes from the most. So,
I can see that. I like a hot drink.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, even in a summer day, I'll make myself like a hot like a decaf coffee at night if like the feeling strikes me.
Yeah, I only do it during the cold months really, because like I switch to iced coffee when I drink like espresso or like lattes, not espresso, like lattes and stuff like that during the summer. I'll switch to iced as soon as it starts getting hot out, because drinking a hot drink on a hot day just makes me sweaty. Like, don't like it. Especially when it's got caffeine in it, you know. But yeah, no, tea's a really good one. I do enjoy drinking me some tea. Yeah, this week I have been drinking, or this last couple weeks, I have drank so much LaCroix. Ridiculous amounts of LaCroix. Because I've just been sitting at home, like, playing video games or, you know, hanging out. And one of the days I had, like, 6 LaCroix or something, like, throughout the night.
Damn, you got a problem, buddy.
Like,
you got
to back it off. And I mean, they're just good. And I just, you know, I like the carbonation. There's no calories, so like I don't feel bad drinking that many of them, because that's the big thing with like sodas.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, if I drink a whole, every once in a while I'll have the idea that I want to drink a Coke. I'm like, "Oh yeah, Coke sounds good." And I'll get like halfway through and I'm like,
You're just, it's like eating
anymore.
An entire bag of candy corn.
Yeah, it's like, it's just too much sugar. It's so much sugar. I don't know how anyone does it. Because I'll do it every once in a while. Like, you know, if we do canned Cokes at one of the bars I work at, instead of like a soda gun. And I'll have to open a can to make someone like a whiskey Coke. And then I'll have one by the end of the night. And sometimes I'll have like a full one. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll drink the rest of that. You know, it's a free Coke. You know, it's going to go to waste if I don't. And I'll just like sip on it. I'm like, man, I won't even finish it. I'll get like most of the way through, and I'm like, I don't want this anymore. I just don't.
That I want to get back into is making a homemade root beer.
I remember your root beer. Your root beer was actually really good.
Yeah, that shit's awesome. Like like steep a bunch of different. It's like making an Amaro, mm-hmm. but without the alcohol.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Actually, I kind of like that.
And it's awesome. When you do it yourself, because you can really get like specialty ingredients, you can up levels of certain things that mm-hmm. you enjoy, and it's a lot of fun to just like play around with that. And I guarantee you, if you make root beer at home, no root beer that you get after that is going to come close.
Right.
Because
a lot of it's just really sugary. A lot of the root beers, like they have like one or two main flavor components, and the rest is just like, oh, let's just fuck it up with like sugar and brown sugar flavors. Do you like kombucha? This is just I was just thinking about kombucha just now.
I love kombucha, and there is a brand of kombucha here that is made in Australia mm-hmm. that has come over to New Zealand called Remedy. Mm-hmm. And it is a zero sugar kombucha. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. You can get it in cans or glass bottles, and they have a bunch of fun flavors like mango passion fruit, lemon ginger, a purple one.
A purple one.
And yeah, they're super good. They're very tasty. They actually remind me a lot of this, like, soda water and drinking vinegar.
Yeah, I can see that. I think the first time I had kombucha was when we went to Denver. You and I went to Boulder and right outside of Denver.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we went to a kombucha, or a place that had a lot of kombucha. We tried some there. And then when I got back home, I was working at a local grocery store for a little bit there before I graduated college, and they just had kombucha on the shelf, and like not every shift, but like I was drinking kombucha for a while there after that, and I really enjoyed it. I don't remember the last time I had kombucha, but I always kind of enjoyed it, because it's kind of got that like,
I like it a lot.
It's got that like,
because it also, it's a little fermented.
Yeah, it's brewed in a way, and it has that like carbonated kind of feel to it too, so it's kind of nice. Kind of into that. All right. Well, yeah. you want to talk about Hocus Pocus? Or you got anything else you want
to
talk about?
I would love to talk about Hocus Pocus.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
As you might notice, this movie, like I said, doesn't have the Dwayne the Rock Johnson mm-hmm. in it, but that's okay, because it does have Bette Midler in it.
It sure does. And everyone knows that Bette Midler is Dwayne the Rock Johnson before Dwayne the Rock Johnson was Dwayne the Rock Johnson. It's just true.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever seen them in the same room? Have you ever seen them in the same movie,
you
Adam?
You know what? No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. the one very important thing I want to note. I still cannot get over how horny that bus driver is in this fucking kids movie.
I remember this was Kat's first time watching it, and she knows our like email address, and she's like, "Oh, is this the horny bus driver?" I'm like, "Yes, this is it."
It's just
we watched this scene, and she's like, "He is overly horny."
It's so aggressive, and honestly, like, I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention to the actual words he was saying last time. Like, I knew he was hitting on them, but there's the very first line that he says. They ask him if he can take them. Or if they say something about kids, if he can bring them the kids, and he was like, might take me a couple tries, but I can get there. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
it's oh man.
Also, his very first line is babbo babbo. Like, what the fuck is that?
It's so crazy. Like, it's so aggressive. It's so aggressive. I'm gonna say,
but it's I would say it's not aggressive. He's just very animated in how horny he is for these ladies. He's not like pushing himself on them
a
creepy way.
That's fair.
He is like I am a horny. Anything I look at is turning me on, and I'm looking at you right now. And to his credit, like all three of them, he's like, damn, damn, damn.
I kind of want him to just show up at the end and just be like hitting on everything that moves, just to
everything that moves.
Just, it doesn't matter. He's all about whatever. I'm gonna say,
yes.
We haven't talked. Like, they made a sequel. We have not. I have not watched it yet. You have not watched it yet. We specifically did not want to watch the sequel before we did this second record. I'm gonna be really disappointed if they don't have a horny Boston bus driver cameo in that movie.
Man, you know what? I was thinking about all the things I would like to see in the second one. Like, I know that there is a musical number, and I'm like, okay, that's good. That's
definitely
going
to be a musical number. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just thinking like, oh, will they have the girl who played Danny come back for a cameo? Will they have any of the kids?
Yeah.
Will they have any of them other characters come back for like cameos and stuff? But now that you say it, like, oh yeah, the cameo I want the most and is the least likely to happen. Is a very horny bus driver.
Just, you know, he doesn't even need to, like, give him one line. Just make him show up and he leaves, you know? I don't know if it was the same guy, it'd be even better.
If it was the same guy, it would be so great, because he'd be like, woohoo, and then just keeps going by.
That would be so fucking great. I think last time I was very nitpicky on this movie, and, I enjoyed it this time. It was fun. It was just, like, a nice little watch. I just think it's very funny how focused they are on the fact that Max is from California. It's just it's such a weird decision. It's so weird. And his bullies are like both of his bullies look like they're from California.
Yeah, they do.
Like, very specifically. They really do. Like, they look like they're from California more than Max does, for sure.
No, Max looks like he's from the fucking Midwest with how they dressed him. Yeah. Except, I guess, maybe his, like, tie-dye t-shirt at the very beginning.
Yeah, he's got tie-dye in, like, one scene. But, like, both of his bullies, one's got, like...
But then he puts on, like, a bomber jacket and, like, a baseball hat.
Yeah. Maybe he's trying to blend in, you know?
Yeah.
That's his Salem, his Massachusetts wear.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, it's a good movie. It was a fun time.
This is a great movie. I love it.
Got
it's
over
perfect.
Most of my nitpicks. Most of the jokes are funny enough to warrant the fact that the witches still don't. It still doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, where do the witches learn all this stuff? Like, they just know so many things immediately.
If you notice, the only person who ever makes like fourth wall breaking jokes with like knowledge that she shouldn't have is Bette Midler.
Yeah, because it's Bette Midler. Like, she's allowed to do that.
Like, Kathy and Jimmy and Sarah Jessica Parker don't. They're always like, oh, what? Oh, a bus. Oh, people in costumes. Oh, a TV. Oh, a candy bar.
Man.
But Bette Midler makes like driving permit like jokes and shit.
And they sing a full song. Although, so when they sing the song, I didn't notice that when they walk in, that's the song the band is playing.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. He's playing that song, Max Interrupts Him. But there's a little scene where Bette Midler is like, oh, this song. And like she's taking note of the song and the band playing that song and Max talking to the lead singer. And then they get up and sing the same song that was just playing. So
that actually kind of makes sense. I've never caught that before.
I didn't notice until this time. I didn't catch it at all. There's something else I noticed too that was interesting. I'm going to blank on what it is.
You know, they almost cut the song from the movie.
Really?
Yeah, and also the tone, the director originally wanted the tone to be a lot darker.
I could see that. I mean, they burned the witches alive.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he wanted it to be a lot darker and way more focused on the witches. Mm-hmm. But I'm super glad it came out the cut it did, where it's like, focus on the kids and their antagonists, and there's a fucking musical number. Oh, it's good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I don't know, I feel like a darker version of this would be pretty good. I feel like I would be down to see both cuts, for sure. I remember what I was going to say. Yeah, no, it's weird that, like, you know, they're from, like, the 1600s. How do cars not freak them the fuck out?
Well, they do. The very first car they see is that fire truck driving towards them, and they, like, scream and run away.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And then they do get startled by the bus.
Yeah, but then they just, like, get in it. They're just, like, they're totally cool. Yeah. How do they not think it's, like, some giant metal monster? Well, not metal. 1600s wouldn't be that bad.
It's because the door opens up, and they are greeted very warmly by this bus driver from Boston who's got nothing but kind things to say to them.
God.
He's probably the most complimentary person they've ever met in their lives, because back in the 1600s, everyone would call them witches and hags and, like, shoo them away from the village. But this guy is just all about it.
I did notice this time, like, that bus driver is the only person in the entire movie who thinks the witches are attractive. Everyone else, even towards Sarah Jessica Parker's character, who is definitely not unattractive.
Yes.
They're all, like, looking at them like they're all, like, evil hags. Like, I was noticing
exactly
that. Because you would think that, like, the Sarah Jessica Parker character, like, she's, like, she's, like, you know, the one luring kids in and stuff, like, with her music or whatever.
Yeah.
You'd think, like, at least some of them teenage boys would be like,
there is one dude dressed as a mummy, mm-hmm, in the party scene before they sing the musical, where Bette Midler is trying to wrangle her cats again, and she pans over to Sarah Jessica Parker, and she's like, did you find the kids? And she's just making out with this dude in a mummy costume.
Oh,
and she's like,
that.
Oh, shit, no. Yeah, it's very funny.
That is really funny. Oh, that's very, very...
Yeah, she just immediately gets distracted and starts making out with some dude.
this movie's... It's got a lot going on, honestly. Like, there's... I don't know. I was trying to, like, try to figure out, like, the plot structure a bit more on this one, where I was like, how is this script written now? Like, I just don't... I'm really unsure.
Like I said, the script was... They shot another entire movie's worth of stuff, mm-hmm, that got changed and edited out. There was, like, way more stuff going on in the high school.
Yeah, I could see that. That makes sense.
Yeah, where, like, the witches, like, got to, like, the swimming pool in the high school and, like, fell in, and there was, like, shenanigans and hijinks there.
Huh.
And yeah. And so there was a bunch of different stuff, and, like, there was way more at the beginning with the witches in, like, Salem and things like that.
Yeah, I could see that too, because I also thought it was weird with this movie, because it's, like, it has that opening, and then it goes to a whole new movie. Like, it almost opens twice, you know? Almost has,
yeah,
like, two,
yeah,
separate,
it totally
openings,
does.
Which is really weird. Because what I would have done, because I noticed this time, because they have the full opening crawl credits, and it goes to Salem, like, in the past immediately. What they should have done is they should have cold opened on Salem in the past, then did the movie credits, then go to the rest of it to have a nice little, like, break. Because if you,
oh, that would have been a good idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies that do stuff like that. As like a, if you're doing like a little pre-movie, like fill in the audience kind of thing, you want to do it before the opening credit or opening crawl, so that it kind of gives a good little like kerchunk for the viewing audience. So it's not.
Yeah, it's like you need to know this. Like, this is necessary lore,
right,
for you to get the backstory.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of a movie that does that off the top of my head.
But... Does Lord of the Rings do that? Does Lord of the Rings have like credits pop up on screen after Galadriel's speech about the rings?
Yes. Yeah. The Lord of the Rings logo, like actual title comes up.
Yeah,
after
the title card, late title card.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a really good example of it. But I feel like there's a few that do like a full scene at the beginning, and then they go into it. I think some of the Marvel movies do that.
At least one of the Avengers movies
for sure. But that's not what I'm. There's probably a few really good examples.
Endgame. Endgame did that. Endgame had a super late title card, which I think was
because,
well done.
Yeah.
Because then they flash forward 5 years.
Honestly, not to be total Marvel shills, but yeah, Infinity War, Endgame, just really solid movies. They really, really stuck the landing on that. No one thought they were going to do it.
You know what? Yeah.
And they really just did.
Yeah, they really did.
Like, legitimately, Infinity War is still one of my favorite Marvel movies. Just...
Yeah, I agree.
Really good.
You know what? And Hocus Pocus is still one of my favorites. See, what's great is that if I watch the sequel and it's not good, I'll just pretend like there is no sequel, the same way I do with Jurassic Park and Jaws.
Yeah. And the Star Wars sequel trilogy. I mean, I'm sorry. It's really weird that they call it a trilogy because there's only the two movies.
Yeah, there is only the two movies. Yeah, it's very really interesting weird. That they just...
Yeah.
Yeah. What's also
like
really weird is that it's a trilogy.
Yeah.
What's really weird is that they just had one movie and there was no beginning and no end. They just released the middle movie on its own. That I thought was very strange.
Look, now, okay. Once again, I will defend Episode 7. I think Episode 7's not that bad. Force Awakens is... It's pretty okay.
I think that the J.J. Abrams movies at the beginning and the end... are fine,
mm-hmm.
and they would have been better if they had let him do the one in the middle, because then it would have just been like a nice, easy J.J. Abramsy. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's a Star Wars. But then they gave the middle one to this like really good auteur director mm-hmm. who did a really good job doing a really good auteur director of Star Wars.
Yep.
Except he didn't have a beginning or an end, so he had to. He filmed three. I guarantee he filmed three movies worth of shit,
mm-hmm.
and then had to edit it into one strange middle part movie,
mm-hmm.
and which made it. It made everyone look bad. No one came off shining out of that. There were lots of talented people, and there was just too many cooks in the kitchen.
See, I actually really like Last Jedi. I think it's good. I think it doesn't fit with Force Awakens, and I think that was kind of...
Not even a little bit.
I think Rian Johnson was doing that on purpose. As I think...
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Rian Johnson... Obviously, they never said this out like in interviews or anything, but I think Rian Johnson actually like secretly hates the way J.J. Abrams did his Star Wars movie. And... Because
I mean, it's obvious.
Because
and J.J. Abrams hates the way that the other guy did his. It's obvious.
Yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and say Rian Johnson is in the right here because his is like, I mean, if we're just looking at Solo, like just not the movie Solo. One of these, if you take any one of those movies by itself, Rian Johnson's is easily the best of the three as an individual movie. Although Force Awakens,
best lightsaber
fight in all of the Star Wars movies.
That one
with Kylo
if you're
and Rey.
Completely discounting the prequels with Obi-Wan and Anakin's Duel of the Fates.
I don't discount.
I'm not. That was the best one. It's so fucking rad.
It's really good. I think it's good. It's long. It's really long.
I love it.
And it's
perfect.
No, it's not. I don't think it's perfect. It is very good. It is very good. That's probably my number two. Although I do really think, even though it's like one of my least favorite Star Wars movies, Return of the Jedi, Luke versus Darth Vader. Really good fight scene.
That's very good.
It's a really
that is
one.
That is an emotion. That's a Shakespearean fight scene mm-hmm. where there's just enough choreography to tell the story,
mm-hmm.
and that's what makes it good. Like the point where Luke is like just hammering on Darth Vader and then chops off his hand.
Yep.
And then looks at
the robot hand, sees himself and his own father, and is like, "What am I doing?" You know, has
and then
that
just
moment
chucks
of
his
realization.
Lightsaber away.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. I've been listening to a podcast where he's breaking down each Star Wars movie, and he started with the prequels, and
nice.
He's not gushing on them, but like he's bringing up some like really valid points of like why the prequels aren't really as bad as you think they are, because they're actually like, you know, they deal with some like the.
I think the prequels are great. When I go to a high school and watch a production of Grease, I don't think that Grease is bad. I just think that...
I see what you're saying. No, I think the point he consistently brings up is the plot and the story of the prequels is actually really solid. It's just not directed well.
Exactly. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah, if you read it as a book, it would be pretty good. No, if you saw it... Yeah.
If someone just gives you a plot synopsis of the prequels and all the themes and... Oh, the themes. Yeah. That's my biggest issue with all the J.J. Abrams Star Wars movies, is that J.J. Abrams has no idea what a theme is. I don't think he's ever...
No.
He does not know what themes are. He's just like, oh...
Not even a little bit.
Oh, I make lasers on the screen. I make things look pretty. And...
he just makes things look pretty.
And on the other hand...
The middle director deals only in themes.
Yeah, Rian Johnson only understands themes.
Yes. So,
sometimes it's detriment of his own characters, which is, you know.
Yes.
That's fine.
All right, but let's stop talking about Star Wars. Maybe even stop talking about Hocus Pocus. And let's talk about the drink we're going to make based on Hocus Pocus.
So we're making it in A. You know, what screams Salem to you as an N.A.?
Salem. Okay, yeah. Halloween. Yeah. Halloween sort of vibes. Fall sort of vibes.
Mm-hmm. And like ciders, pumpkin
spice.
Honestly, I was thinking about this earlier and combining some ideas you had. Your anise flavored tea could be really interesting as a vodka substitution if you like oversteeped that and used it in place of absinthe in a cocktail. Maybe could be really interesting.
That would be cool because absinthe usually comes out green. This cocktail won't be green, but it does make me think of the green stuff in the cauldron. It makes me think of that anise like absinthe-y flavor.
I had to make I did a private event a little while back that was God, I'm going to blank on the author's name.
Hemingway.
Hemingway, thank you. Yeah, I don't know why you remembered I couldn't.
Yeah.
But I had to make a bunch of Hemingway-themed cocktails, and one of Hemingway's favorites was Death in the Afternoon, which is just absinthe and Prosecco.
It's just a glass of Prosecco that you throw a shot of absinthe into because you're a garbage person.
And I tried that version of it, and it was awful. It was so bad.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
But so what I ended up doing was is I made it into a French 75 build and used absinthe in place of my gin and used absinthe, lemon juice, and a little bit of simple syrup topped with Prosecco. And you know what? That turned out really nice, actually. Like, very nice and refreshing. And I, you know, dialed the absinthe back to like an ounce and a half instead of like a 2 ounce pour of absinthe and a fucking Prosecco like a sociopath. That's terrifying. But yeah, that actually turned out pretty well. But I don't know if that's the direction to go with this, but like, I think that's an idea of what to do with like an anise flavored something. You could do like that and citrus and some kind of topper.
We can take a bunch of the ideas that we talked about today and make something like literally that, like take that really oversteeped anise tea and then make a French 75 build out of it, but instead of Prosecco, use tonic water.
Interesting. Or hoppy refresher.
Or hoppy refresher.
Unless
you know what?
Unless it sounds really good.
Yeah? Do you think those flavors would go well together? I haven't had it, so...
Yeah, it's kind of... it tastes like hops, but it's kind of got like a grapefruity kind of vibe. You know, like a grapefruit peel, like expression kind of deal.
Yeah?
Yeah, not quite like a grapefruit soda, but like close. Have you had any of those before? Did you ever try the grapefruit High Noon?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to that. But I mean, obviously it doesn't have any added sugar, so it's just the grapefruit flavor. Or, you know, also the pamplemousse LaCroix.
Pamplemousse LaCroix?
Is also grapefruit flavored, because that's what pamplemousse is. I had to look it up, because I was really confused.
How would you compare the pamplemousse LaCroix to the hoppy refresher?
Hoppy refresher is better. It's got some bitter quality to it, because it's using hops. So you've got like a little bit of that, like, it's not like super bitter, but it's got like a little bit of like a, like kind of like a tonic would, like, you know, like quinine. Quinine's got that little bit of like a bitter kind of quality to it.
Bitter note.
But it has that grapefruit like up front, you know? I think it's
okay. No, yeah, I'm totally down. That sounds good to me.
It is really good.
And it's like bubbly. Mm-hmm. It's a little like
and sparkling.
Nice.
Yeah, what I've been doing is I've been putting Angostura bitters in my hoppy refresher. It's really good. I mean, bitters.
Let's see if
bitters
we
can, in any soda.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's keep this entirely non-alcoholic.
Okay. Yeah. Then we got then anise. We've got a little bit of lemon juice. What do we use? A little bit of simple syrup.
Do we use lemon or lime?
You know, I could see a good argument for either, honestly. I find that anise pairs really well with like a lemon expression. So like when I make a classic absinthe cocktail for someone, when I do like the sugar cube and the absinthe and the water drip, I will usually garnish with a lemon peel expression, as I think that lemon oil really goes well with the anise flavors, kind of like accentuates it a little bit more. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm down. Yeah, I think we should use... I was like kind of leaning towards lemon anyway. Mm-hmm.
I think you could make argument for lime, since we're using a grapefruit, so like almost a grapefruit flavored something to top with, because I think lime and grapefruit go better together than lemon and grapefruit.
Is it grapefruit, or does it just have grapefruit notes from the hops?
It's not grapefruit. It is reminiscent of grapefruit.
Yeah. I think we should stick with lemon then.
Yeah. I think any kind of citrus it'll pair well with.
Yeah.
It'll bring
Do we want to do anything different with the small amount of sweetener that we're probably going to use?
That's a good question.
Do we want to make it like a honey syrup, or
I could see a honey syrup like being infused? Good. I wonder if
but probably unnecessary.
Yeah. So my thing is, what color is that tea that you end up with? Like, what's
it'll be like dark brown.
Say, I wonder if you change up the kind of syrup you use, you do like a fruit syrup or something like that, you get a color into that, maybe it would help make the cocktail look a bit more vibrant.
The cocktail is it's not going to be dark brown. It's actually a pretty light brown.
Okay.
It's lighter than Earl Grey.
Okay. So we're probably gonna end up with a pale.
Yeah, it's probably gonna end up looking a lot like a French 75 with like a little pale yellow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna pull a lot of color from the tea actually.
Okay. And the hoppy refresher is clear. It's a seltzer, like it's fully clear, so it won't get anything from that. And our lemon juice won't really add a whole lot. So I think whatever syrup we add in is really gonna bring a lot of color, depending on what we do.
So, if we just add simple syrup, it could just be clear.
Yeah, I feel like we can do better than that, though. I think you could bump this up another notch. What kind of... So, like, if we did, like, a fruit-flavored syrup, what would we use?
And
what would pair well with anise? My initial thought was blackberry, but that's because we were talking about blackberries earlier. Or I was talking about blackberries.
Blackberry, pineapple pairs well with anise.
Pineapple might not be bad.
Cinnamon. Cinnamon pairs well with anise.
Yeah, I can see cinnamon.
And a cinnamon syrup is super easy to make.
Yeah, and that would make it kind of like a reddish brownish.
Yeah,
yeah, that could be good. It could be good.
And it would also be more like the fall pumpkin spice kind of flavor going on then.
Yeah, I could see that. Maybe you could like garnish it with like a cinnamon stick or something.
Maybe. Cinnamon stick, and I really like your idea of lemon expression.
Yeah, maybe you don't need the cinnamon stick, because I mean, if you do it in a flute, your cinnamon stick's gonna go right at the bottom anyway. Now we're gonna get a lot out of that.
I think just a lemon peel, like a real French 75 kind of bill, lemon peel, drop it in there.
Yeah, I feel like cinnamon could be good. What if we did a like a vinegar instead of citrus and sweetener? What if we did some kind of flavored vinegar instead, because that kind of gets you a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of acidity.
A little bit of acidity.
I don't know if it'll be good. I'm just gonna throw that out there, like an anise and like some kind of like vinegar.
I see most of the vinegars or shrubs that I usually use in cocktails are, well, they're a shrub. Mm-hmm. They're a vinegaring of a fruit in order to preserve that flavor when it goes out of season.
Right.
Or at least that's what shrubs were generally used for.
Yeah, generally.
And so it's usually like a fruit extraction into a vinegar.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't necessarily know what fruit we would want to go with in this, and I don't necessarily know if we would want to go fruit.
Yeah.
If it's supposed to be like a fall,
like a fall
sort of
kind of themed thing.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if you could make a shrub out of like pumpkin, like a pumpkin shrub.
I was also thinking that. I don't think you can. Pumpkin infuses really well if you throw it into something with a sous vide.
Huh.
You could make a. I bet with a sugar and simple syrup, I bet you can make a pretty good pumpkin syrup.
Yeah, that's possible. I could see that going over pretty well. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just go back to the other. I'm just throwing that out there because we were talking about the vinegars earlier, too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. No, I think I'm pretty cool with that. So, like, kind of like a French 75 build, but you use that over steeped anise tea for your liquor component. Probably say, like, an ounce and a half of that. And then...
Yeah.
My French 75 build is usually half ounce lemon, half ounce whatever my sweetener is, and then top with your sparkling.
Yeah, that's pretty much my build too. I think I go a little bit harder on the citrus and the sugar.
Yeah, I usually find that if I add in too much more than that, it doesn't fit whatever flute that I'm using. Like, I don't get to add much effervescence to it. So I usually pull mine back. So I do like an ounce and a half of my liquor and then half. Of each of the others.
Half.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good build.
Yeah, it works out pretty well.
And then you can add about half of the glasses Prosecco then.
Yeah, yeah, roundabouts. It's like a half to a third, depending on, you know, how big your glass
is. I think that,
is.
Yeah, you don't want to go less than a third
if
you're making something like a French 75.
Yeah, you want that effervescence that's important.
Yeah.
It really adds quite a bit to that cocktail, I think. Man, French 75 is such a good brunch cocktail.
It's
so underrated. It bums me out. Every time someone orders mimosa, I kind of want to die a little inside. And I've worked a lot of brunch shifts.
I mean, it's mimosa, lower ABV.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
You know what's better than a mimosa? An Aperol spritz.
Yeah, that's
or
the other one.
Any kind of spritz.
Any kind of Aperol spritz is also a fantastic
Aperol
brunch
spritz
cocktail.
Fucking great.
Such a good brunch cocktail, too. It's so delicious.
I could drink those all day, which you're supposed to do.
Also, lower ABV, you know, very low, very low alcohol content.
Exactly, you're supposed to drink them all day.
Yeah, because what is Aperol? Aperol's like, what, like 17% alcohol or something?
Aperol is 11%.
God, I always think it's higher than it is. It's not.
Yeah, Frangelico is 17%.
Is Aperol even shelf stable? 11% alcohol?
Aperol is shelf stable because of the sugar content.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah, the sugar content along with the alcohol content.
That makes sense.
Bumps it up to being shelf stable.
It's wild. Wild to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think we got a pretty good cocktail. Right. So what are we calling it?
All right. Okay. So that's a good point. What are we calling it? So we're going to do ounce and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Ounce and a half of anise tea.
Yep. Oversteeped.
Yeah.
Heavily steeped.
Anise tea. And then are we going half-half
mm-hmm.
with our stuff, or are we going to like change that balance? Or let's not change the balance yet. Let's try it first.
I think half-half,
and see how it goes.
Give it a shot and see where you're at with it. Because I could actually see, depending on how strong your cinnamon syrup is, you could maybe dial it back. But I think you probably don't need to.
Cinnamon
or dial it
syrup.
Up even if it's not coming out enough.
Cinnamon simple. And then top with what was it called again?
It's Lagunitas Hoppy Refresher. That's what it's called.
Hoppy Refresher.
Yeah.
That's a good name too.
Yeah, I think they used to call it Hop Water, I'm pretty sure. They changed the name.
A bad name.
Yeah, it wasn't a good name. Hoppy Refresher is much better. Yeah, it's really good. Like, legitimately, if you can find it, get your hands on it. I need to figure out. Lagunitas got bought out by somebody, and it's going to bug me until I figure it out. It might be InBev.
All right, so we're definitely serving this in a flute.
Yeah, I think flute's the right call. I think if you end up having to bump anything up, I would think about... Oh, they're owned by Heineken. That's who they're owned by.
Oh, okay.
That's not that bad. That's not InBev. That's better than... That's better than InBev. I think if you end up needing to bump up your citrus and or syrup, maybe switch it to a larger glass, maybe like a white wine glass could be okay. And then you could put it on the rocks and then top it with whatever. Because that's usually what I do for
I think this would be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that should be good. Right here. My only worry would be a half ounce of the cinnamon syrup might not pop enough, but you know, it really depends.
Actually, I think I was actually worried that it would pop too much because cinnamon is a aggressive flavor.
Yeah, that's fair too.
It really takes over things.
Could overpower. You know, I bet cinnamon and grapefruit would go really well. Like, yeah, this actually sounds really good.
This sounds like a great drink.
Sounds really good.
I definitely want to try this. Next time I'm making syrup, I'm just going to make some cinnamon syrup because I need to get some whole cinnamon sticks.
I haven't made a cinnamon syrup in a while. Every once in a while,
it's so easy.
I'll make some banana peel syrup every once in a while, and I'll usually add cinnamon to that, but not a lot.
Well, how often are you eating cinnamon sticks?
No, never. Actually, the bright side, Lagunitas, it's owned by Heineken International, so you might actually be able to find that somewhere in New Zealand.
There is a shit ton of Heineken here.
Yeah, it might have some Lagunitas eventually.
I'm going to find out who the Heineken rep is and start asking about that hoppy refresher.
You got to try it, man. It's honestly, it's like legitimately really good.
All right, well, what are we going to be calling this cocktail?
That's a good question.
It's got cinnamon, anise, lemon, hops.
We call it a witchy refresher.
Oh, that's so good.
It's pretty good.
You got it in one. Yeah. Good job.
Every once in a while, you know what's funny about that is I've got a cocktail on my menu right now that I've been struggling for like 2 weeks to name.
But sometimes lightning just hits you.
Yeah, it just clicks. It's always when I'm not really trying. Like when I'm just sitting trying to think of it, I just can't. It just doesn't happen.
It's
not there. Usually I've got like an idea, you know, like I know that at least there's like a word. There's a word. I'm like, oh, that's in there somewhere, but I can't put the whole phrase together.
Cool. All right. Okay. So if you want to make yourself the witchy refresher, what you're going to need is 1.5 ounces of heavily steeped anise tea, 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of cinnamon simple, and then you're going to shake that, pour it in a flute, top it with Lagunitas hoppy refresher, and then garnish that with a lemon peel that you express over, and then just drop that lemon peel right on in there.
Yeah, just throw it in there. I mean, you could put it on the rim, but you don't really need to.
It's fun when you throw it in there because it gives all the bubbles a place to nucleate, and it starts like bubbling up around it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard before.
That sounds good. I think we might have to dial around and fiddle with the measurements a little bit.
Yeah,
but overall, those flavors together, I think, are going to work real nice.
Yeah, it actually sounds really tasty. I don't actually like anise, but I could see that all kind of playing really nicely together. So, cool. Well,
yeah. Uh-huh. This was a fun episode.
That was fun. I'm glad we got to go back on Hocus Pocus. We didn't talk about it a lot, but I think that's fine. I think talking about NA beverages is it's a worthwhile endeavor, and not a lot of people do that, especially not bartenders, so, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It's worthwhile.
All right, well, next on the docket, we should be watching fucking Doom.
Well, actually, Adam, I'm planning on releasing this episode on Halloween, so Doom will be before this episode.
It doesn't matter. At some point, we're going to watch Doom, and I'm going to be excited about watching Doom, and I'm going to talk a lot about Doom.
We're going to talk a lot about Doom. We're going to do that real soon. And
everyone might have a smaller like bartender topic, so we can have a larger Doom topic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bud. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right. I'll talk to you later, man.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode. I had a lot of fun. Logan, did you have a lot of fun, Logan?
I had a really good time.
Yeah, it was a really good time. We got drunk. We talked about a thing. We made a cocktail.
That sure was a thing.
If you want to hear more about the cocktails that we're making, follow us on Instagram at Cocktail Conceit. We post more than just the cocktails on the show. We post cocktails that we're working on in our outside life. And if you want to ask us about media or cocktails or anything in between, contact us by emailing overlyhornybostonbusdriver@gmail.com. Logan, how do you spell that?
I'm not spelling that, Adam, but it is overly horny bostonbusdriver at gmail.com. Pretty easy to figure out. And if you'd like to further support us, you can join us on Patreon, where you'll get access to exclusive content and cocktails made by yours truly. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Oh, hey, there's Toby.
It's Toby. There he is. He's got a spot. What do you know?